Listen to me. We can give it a try. I'll look you straight in the eye and pull you to me. What I'm gonna do next, I'll even tie it to your imagination. Do you hear me? If you don't understand, I'll take a hold of your hand and pull you near me. What I'm gonna do next, I'll even tie it to your imagination.
Hello and welcome to The Sector, the radio show podcast discussing the world of nonprofits, social justice, and activism. With me, your host, Ethan Clow. And of course, as always, we are broadcasting right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver on your radio dial and streaming online at citr.ca. And of course, via podcast, wherever technology permits. This is episode 31 of The Sector, broadcasting Friday the 12th of December. So we got a great show today, lots to discuss, some interesting topics related to, well, I guess the spirit of the season, giving. Why is it that we give to charity the most over the holiday period? And where did that tradition come from? Or was that just sort of built into the whole holiday giving, goodwill, you know, thing that was going on already? The charities just kind of swoop in and latch onto it. So we'll take a look at that idea and discuss a bit and perhaps get some feedback. What exactly motivates you to give over the holidays? Do you feel that with all that present buying and all of the festive things that you're doing, you know, you're putting up lights, you're buying cards, you're buying big turkeys for dinner, perhaps that kind of, you kind of think to yourself, ooh, I'm buying a lot for myself. I don't know, maybe I feel a little bit guilty about this. And does that motivate you to maybe give to charity a bit more? Well, charities are counting on it. So we'll examine that a little bit, think about it. And then later on in the show, we're going to have some more live openings of direct mail. This is exciting. I've gotten some direct mail from two organizations that I have a connection with. One of them is the Canadian Blood Services, who I've given to in the past. So this is sort of their attempt to reach out to me as a past donor to try to get me to donate again. And the other one is from BCIT. Now, the interesting thing about BCIT is that I have worked with them in their fundraising efforts before. So we'll see what they have to say and see how it's tailored to me as a former fundraising employee. And we'll see where that goes. So that'll be exciting to look at. Now, moving forward for the sector, I wanted to let you all know about what our holiday schedule will be. As you can imagine, I'm not going to be broadcasting on the 26th of December. That would be silly. So we're going to have one more new episode of the month, which will be next week, which is the 19th. And then we'll be off for 2 weeks. So there'll be no sector on the 26th. And no sector on the following week, which is the week of the new year. We will return on January 9th, 2015, which is exciting to say. It's always kind of new, that new sort of thrill when you say the year for the new year. 2015. We're living in the future. So look forward to that. And of course, we'll have some brand new interviews, lots of new content coming up in the new year. We're hoping to get in contact with a number of key individuals, some activist circles, and a few in the nonprofit sphere as well. So look forward to that. It's going to be great. It's going to be great fun. Well, before going much further into the show, why don't we just take a quick break and grab your coffee, because you'll need it. It's Friday morning, of course. And we'll return after this short break.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
I swear to God, I'm not wearing just my underwear right now. This is Beth.
Hi, this is Beth Ditto from The Gossip, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. No, yeah, this is the best thing in the world. You guys are going to be blown away.
Hello, we are back on The Sector with me, Ethan Clow, discussing the role of nonprofit, social justice, and activism, as you well know. Anyway, I know that I said before the break that we would go on to discuss giving over the holiday season, why this tradition exists, why we do it, and what motivates us. Now, and I'm fully intending to do that, of course, but I did see a story come up on my newsfeed, and I just had to talk about it because it is so relevant to what we do here on The Sector, and it's just so crazy. So you may know of Peru's Nazca site. This is the area of Peru where you have those very large monolith carvings into the soil, and they have images of like hummingbirds and other animals and figures and whatnot. And traditionally, you see them when you fly over Peru, or if you're on a very tall hill, you can also see them. And they're beautiful. They're these amazing lines that were crafted by this ancient civilization that lived in Peru. Now, you think about that and you go, okay, that's really beautiful and amazing. Why am I telling you this? Well, it turns out that there was an organization, a nonprofit charity in some areas, that decided that they were going to spruce up the area with a advertisement for themselves. That's right, Greenpeace decided to make a few additions to Peru's Nazca site. They installed a advertisement next to the hummingbird, which says, "Time for change, the future is renewable," and then it has Greenpeace written on it. And they used these big yellow tarps. So it kind of looks like from an aerial view, almost like somebody spray painted yellow paint. I don't believe it actually is spray paint. I believe it actually is like a tarp that they've nailed down to the ground. Now, the problem, of course, is one, these sites are World Heritage Sites. And if you know anything about those, well, they don't take well to vandalism of any kind at all. Second, these areas are actually very fragile. I mean, if you think about it, they're thousands of years old. They're not exactly used to getting a lot of work done on them. And any kind of work that is done on them is done under very, very careful conditions. Now, the ground around the area is so sensitive, Peru has forbidden basically anybody from walking in that area. And I mean, not just, you know, the average citizen. They're talking about people who are high-ranking members of government or important foreign dignitaries. You're not allowed to go there, period. So not only has Greenpeace potentially damaged the area, but they've walked on ground that is considered by some to be sacred, that is also considered to be part of Peru's national identity, and have violated a pretty significant law of the land. In an interview with the BBC, Peru's deputy cultural minister stated that you walk there and the footprint is going to last hundreds or thousands of years. Now, the reason that that is the case is that you have these black rocks on a white background. The soil is white, and then you have these very rare black rocks. And so if you walk there, you know, your footprint is going to show up. What's even worse is that on the advertisement that they put on the ground, one of the words is very close to the hummingbird line, and some Greenpeace people actually walked into that line. I mean, that's a huge, like, that's not even close to being okay, because they've actually violated the site, the specific site of the World Heritage Area. That's severe damage. I mean, that's going to cost a lot of money to either get repaired, or they may just be like, well, screw it, we can't fix this, and now it's ruined. So the long and short of this, of course, is that if you're an organization, if you're a nonprofit or a charity, do not damage World Heritage sites. I never, ever thought I would have to say that on air. But if you are a nonprofit, do not destroy priceless, irreplaceable World Heritage sites that are belonging to the collective cultural and historic identity of an entire people. That is bad. That is not good. You will lose donors over this. Just don't do it. Stay away from it. If your plan calls for you to interfere with a World Heritage site, no, just veto it. It has to go away. Your board member should be briefed. Any plans that come up from our executive director, from our volunteer board, if they involve interfering with a World Heritage site, no, just veto it. There's others' ideas. The Ice Bucket Challenge, great idea, does not violate a World Heritage site. Don't do this. Greenpeace, ugh. Now, what will the fallout be for this stunt? Pretty serious, by the looks of it. Peru is planning on filing criminal charges against the activists before they leave the country. And Greenpeace has apologized for the stunt. They have apologized for any moral offense to the Peruvian people. They plan on collaborating with the government to determine if any damage was done. And they also plan to stop using photos of the protest in its campaigns. They are also sending one of their executive directors to Peru to apologize in person to the government, as well as to, I would assume, liaison any efforts to fix the situation. So, I mean, good on Greenpeace for doing this and for trying to make this right. I mean, they certainly don't want to make enemies of the people of Peru and the Peruvian government. I mean, Greenpeace and governments haven't exactly gotten along in the first place, but this is just a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. So it's a good thing that they're apologizing and that they're being up in front and center about that. But I mean, again, this is one of those circumstances where it never should have happened in the first place. There, you know, I would actually go so far as to say that I think whoever okayed this, they should be losing their job over this. I mean, this is a disaster. If there was anyone in Peru who was a supporter of Greenpeace, and their donations have been put in jeopardy because of this, I mean, that's just a disaster. If there's any Peruvian government officials who have been allies of Greenpeace who have been jeopardized as allies because of this, again, like, that's just that can't happen. So, an unbelievable circumstance. I can't believe that it actually happened, but there you go. Well, let's get back to the actual topic of today's show, and that is holiday giving. Now, on last week's show, we talked about some trends in holiday giving at the workplace. For instance, the idea that employees actually prefer that their employers give them gifts, but instead of giving them like a physical thing or a coupon to Starbucks or whatever, they'd much rather have a donation made in their name to a charity of their choice. So that's pretty generous, and it lends itself to the discussion of why do we get especially generous around the holiday season? Now, there's lots of different theories to this, and I mentioned a few at the beginning of the show. Maybe it's guilt. Maybe because we're spending so much money on ourselves and those around us, and we're going out and buying TVs and PlayStations and, in some cases, extravagant gifts like cars, vacations, and ski resorts and whatnot, that maybe we start to feel a little bit bad. We start to feel a bit, ooh, I'm spending too much money on myself. You know, I've lost sight of the true spirit of the holiday season, and I've replaced it with this materialism that I'm just going to accumulate stuff, whether it be video games or books or movies or whatever. And I've, instead of reaching out and connecting with people and experiencing sort of the joy of the holidays, I'm spending more time, you know, in line at Walmart. Now, this materialism can have other effects on our giving nature. particularly when we focus on, say, giving to people outside of our immediate family or immediate friends. There's actually a study that I was reading about that Americans aren't giving particularly much to their coworkers. A study conducted of more than 873 U.S. adults employed full-time and part-time in November suggested that a majority won't give gifts to their coworkers, 56%. They won't give to their boss or their colleagues. And nearly half of workers who aren't planning on buying gifts for anyone at work, for reasons other than money, 43% of them, they feel that if they were to buy gifts for somebody at work, they would have to buy something for everyone. And that would be considered, you know, quote, too much. More than a quarter of these workers, 28%, say they don't know their coworkers well enough to buy them gifts. And about 1 in 4, 23%, report they don't plan to buy gifts for others because they don't want to appear as though they are trying to gain favoritism. So it's not so much that people are ungenerous or that they are miserly, but rather they seem to be kind of suffering from this gift exhaustion. And I wonder if that could play into the nonprofit charity sector as well. And in fact, I mean, I think it's something that we've sort of touched on a little bit here on the show, is that with so many good causes and so many good organizations, charities, causes, things that we believe in, where are we to give our money? How do we decide how to give our money? You know, there are viewpoints that you should approach it from a very mythological point of view. So examining a charity's financial statements, figuring out how well they put your donation to use. Some people would argue that that's not very effective and that you should look at how well do they put your donor dollars to use. So looking at it from a more intangible point of view, how effective are they in their chosen area? You could also look at what is the evidentiary basis for supporting them. You know, if they are supporting a food bank or a toy drive or whatever, you could look at the evidence and say, does a contribution to here actually improve the quality of life of the people they are trying to help? Can that be measured and verified? So there's lots of different ways to sort of analyze which charity you give your money to. But you're still going to be left with the question at the end of the day, which one do I choose? Because, you know, there's going to be a number of them that pass those litmus tests you create. So at the end of the day, you do have to sort of wade into this and say, well, what do I think is more important? A food bank or a clothing drive? Or is it a homeless shelter, or is it a women's shelter, or is it a educational charity, or is it a health charity? These are all complex questions. And so if there's too many choices, as this study suggests, we kind of shut down. And we don't want to appear to be favoring one charity or the other. We don't want to appear miserly. So we kind of actually kind of retreat and say, I don't have enough money to support all these charities. Which, again, I think is sad. But it also overlooks the fact that there are other ways to give. And you can volunteer your time. You can pick one or two charities and say, I'm going to give a couple hours to them and a couple hours to them. Or you could try to find non-monetary ways to show your support. Maybe with like social media or Facebook. Maybe you could send out cards encouraging your friends and family to donate. So there's other ways to reach out and help. It's just that we don't necessarily think about those ways. Now, in looking at another article that was in USA Today about holiday giving, a pretty sizable amount of charitable giving is done in the last 3 months of the year, about 34% of all charitable giving. Now, you might think, well, that's not bad, 34%, but it's not like the majority. It's not like 50%. But if you also consider that of those donations, about 18% are given in December alone. Now, one of the factors is that people want to make sure that their gifts get counted before the end of the calendar year. That's also for tax purposes, and you want to make sure that you get your tax receipt before, you know, the taxes are due and all that stuff. So that's a big factor as well. But one of the interesting aspects about giving over the holiday season is that that's when charities themselves tend to power up, you know, really push the fundraising appeals. Hence, you know, we get a lot of direct mail, we get a lot of commercials and advertisements and notices about giving to charity. Now, I mentioned the whole question of guilt or spending money or materialism and all these things that you think would motivate us to give to charity. But one of the biggest motivators is being asked. In fact, most people, the reason they don't donate to charity is because they've never been asked to donate to charity. They never had a charity approach them and say, hey, here's our mission, here's what we do, would you consider supporting us? But when charities do go out there and they do ask people, it turns out that a lot of people, you know, close to about 80% of the population, a little bit higher actually, supports charity. That's a huge percentage. So a lot of people are just kind of waiting for the charity to come up to them and say, will you support us? And, you know, lo and behold, during December, November, October, that's when charities do it the most. So you kind of get a bit of a perfect storm. You have a calendar year ending. People are naturally inclined to spend money this time of year. And charities are out there knocking on doors, sending out letters, making appeals. And so that's why we get a lot of donations. So it's not so much that there's like a magic season holiday spirit going around making people more generous. It's more that we have a lot of different factors that influence us to give at this time of year. One interesting question is what factors are motivating Canadians to give and what charities are Canadians targeting as an option for giving over the holidays? Well, I got a bit of information on that, but I'm going to actually save that for next week. So look forward to that. We'll dive into what charities do Canadians prioritize over the holiday season. And we'll evaluate it. We'll get a bit cheeky and say, are Canadians really valuing the right charities? Anyway, let's take a quick break here on the sector. When we come back, I'm actually going to go for a musical interlude. We haven't done one of those in a few weeks. So this musical interlude is from Frazee Ford playing September Fields off of their new album, Indian Ocean.
You better grab the best of your life. Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, the Rumpus Room, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus. Go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure. That's what friends are for.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station.
Campus Outreach is looking for... Hang on.
College radio can pretty much be summed up in five words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And we are back here on The Sector with me, Ethan Clow, discussing the role of nonprofit social justice and activism right here on CITR. And before the break, we played a song by Frazee Ford, September Fields, off of the Indian Ocean album. A popular song on the charts here at CITR. Last week was number 30, this week number 3. So that's a pretty big improvement. And not a bad song. Pretty good. I love musical breaks on the show. I just love having like a nice relaxing moment between segments on the show. You know, we're talking about something serious and then we're talking about something serious and the nice song just kind of goes, relax for a bit. Good time to sort of enjoy your coffee as you're listening on this Friday morning. Well, let's get back to the show. I talked about before the break doing a live opening of some more direct mail that I have received. And I have two letters here, courtesy of the BCIT Foundation and the Canadian Blood Services. So you might be saying, okay, well, you know, how are these different than previous direct mails that I've opened? Well, these ones, I guess you could say, are direct. These aren't the spray and pray of previous episodes. And that, of course, being where you have a nonprofit or a charity that you don't have a connection to, you've never given to, and you may have gotten on a mailing list somehow, but you're not really sure how. And in some cases, they're not even really addressed to you. They're just, they show up in your mailbox, and it's what they call spray and pray, where they basically just hope that you find it, you read it, and you donate. And then they gain a donor and, you know, they can steward you into different levels of donations. But with these, this is based on a previous relationship. They actually have me in their records somewhere and are trying to sort of reach out to me and get me to, you know, refocus on them for the holiday season. So let's take a look at what they have to say. And I haven't decided yet, but this will probably be the last opening we do of direct mail for a while, at least, especially for the holidays. I think since tomorrow or next week will be our you know, our last show before the break. And this is a bit different, so we'll kind of see how this works out for us. But okay, so let's start with the BCIT Foundation. Now, this letter is interesting because, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I've actually worked with the BCIT Foundation in their fundraising department. So we'll be curious to see how they approach me. Now, the letter has a couple different parts here, as always. Okay, so here's the envelope, the return envelope that's in it. Postage paid, of course. And let's just double check. Nope, it's one of those crappy licks to seal the envelope envelopes. Again, I know this is getting old, but there needs to be a new way of doing this so that you can just tear away a piece of paper and it's sticky and you just close it and it's done. This licking of envelopes has to stop. Okay, so let's look at the letter here. Okay, so I'll skip over the parts here that are not relevant just because we want to get through this. It's got my name, my address, the date. Dear Ethan Clow. This first paragraph here is a bit of a quote. It says, "Thanks to the financial aid I have received, I am able to successfully complete my diploma in electrical and computer engineering. Without this funding, reaching my goals would be near impossible, as I would not have the funds to cover all the expenses that come with being a full-time student." Matt Lamott, student award recipient. So basically, this is to sort of remind us of the importance of the Alumni Association. You know firsthand how donations from graduates make a difference. Thank you for being part of the team that raised more than $80,000 to support student success. Yum, yum, yum. That's very good. Today, more than 46,000 students attend BCIT, making us one of the largest post-secondary institutions in our province. Sadly, not all 46,000 students will complete their studies due to lack of money. BCIT educates grads like you who build our homes, workplaces, schools, and hospitals. You build and run our transport, power, and communication networks. You work in all areas of business, and you help provide vital health care. Together, grads like you have helped improve the quality of life in BC and across Canada for everyone's benefit. You know that today, students like Matt are faced with the challenges of ever-increasing tuition and living costs, and they continually report that a lack of funds is their top barrier to completing their education. The BCIT 50th Anniversary Legacy Fund has been established to create a permanent source of funding to support students in financial need. Contributions to the 50th Anniversary Legacy Fund will help students complete their studies and bring BCIT closer to the day when no deserving student faces the prospect of leaving school due to lack of their funds. Oh, that's direct. Turning it over, we have a little bit on the back here. Let's see. Financial support transforms the lives of deserving individuals by providing them with the means to pay for critical expenses such as tuition, textbooks, and other necessities in order to complete their studies. To date, we have raised more than $200,000. With your help, we can reach $250,000 goal. With your help, we can reach our $250,000 goal and provide financial support that can make a difference between students completing school or dropping out. As we celebrate BCIT's 50th anniversary this year, and the achievements of more than 155,000 grads like you, we hope you will consider making a gift to help the next generation of BCIT students. Sincerely, blah, 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 President. P.S. Every donation will help a deserving student who is struggling financially. Please reach out and help a student in need by making your gift today. Okay, well, that's a very simple, direct appeal. I like it. I think that works pretty good. It makes its point. I think you could argue with this one that the personal appeal is strong from the student. That's great. They lead in with that. I think that maybe there's a couple parts here I thought where it kind of got a bit wordy, a bit kind of repetitive, but that could have been trimmed a little bit. And I'm not sure I like this whole thing. I mean, we saw this with BCIT as well, UBC as well, where the appeal kind of takes up a page and a half. And with BC or with UBC, it was actually like it was a long piece of paper. It was this is a standard letter size piece of paper. And even this one, I mean, you kind of go down one page, then down the other side as well. So that's a bit of a strange thing. I'm not sure that I like that, but other than that, I think it's a strong appeal. It's worded well. It draws a connection right to me and my connection to the BCIT, and it gives us a firsthand look of why this fund exists. It helps students in financial need. It's got a bit of a student perspective. It talks about progress and where they're going with it and what they hope to accomplish. I mean, that's a very good appeal. If we look at the gift card that comes with it, which is nice, it's on a heavy card stock, which is always good. Let's see, one-sided, at least for the gift part. It says at the top, "Your gift makes a difference." And it's got like this blue banner. "I would like to make a gift to the BCIT 50th Anniversary Legacy Fund and the following amount." And let's look at the amounts here. 50, 100, 200, 500, and "I prefer to give blank." Okay, I like that. $50, $100, $200. So increasing doubles the amount each time until you get to 500, which, you know, ups it considerably from 200. That's good. That's a, you know, they're asking for a lot, but it's really good. I think that they've anchored it high so that, you know, like I mentioned before, that a lot of us don't like to pick the lowest option. We prefer to pick the second lowest option. So $50, even though that's a tangible amount of money, you kind of go, ooh, well, I'm not cheap. I'm not the cheapest option, am I? No, I'll go with the second cheapest option, which is $100. And that's a decent amount of money to give to charity. Then it's got all the usual stuff, your name, phone number, etc. Cash or check. Credit card options available, good. Oh, here's interesting. You can opt to be anonymous, or you can have your name listed in the honor roll. Now that's very clever. Donor recognition built into the donor card. I like it. That is well done, BCIT. Okay, flipping it over. Again, very nice cardstock. It looks pretty. A quote from a student. "It is nearly impossible to hold a part-time job and go to school full-time. So financial support can mean the difference between completing one's education or dropping out." Jessica, bursary recipient. Well, very good. I like it. So, I mean, again, and that's a very simple ask. That's a very simple direct mail, but it's very effective. You know, it's got everything you want on it. It's got the charitable registration number, their website, BCIT Foundation, a simple call to action. It's got examples of what your donation goes to cover. Well done. Except for the envelope. Except for this stupid licky envelope. I don't understand why we can't have like a pull away. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like those almost like they're like post-it note kind of things. You just pull it away and it's sticky. Okay. Well, whatever. Let's look at the next one, and we'll see if the Canadian Blood Service people are just as good. So we got this Canadian Blood Services appeal. Now, I've actually given them money before in the past, and that was motivated by taking a sort of behind-the-scenes tour of the Canadian Blood Services, their sort of office and processing area in Vancouver, which actually was organized by me. Back when I was working with CFI Vancouver, we arranged to do sort of a behind-the-scenes tour for our memberships, and I went along. It was fantastic, very interesting. And really motivated me to give. So let's see if they capitalize on that again. So we'll open up the direct mail. This envelope is quite a bit thicker than any previous one. It feels hefty. Wow, there is a lot of stuff in this envelope. Okay, so let's pull this apart here. Obviously, I'm opening this for the first time. Let's see what we got. Ooh, wow. Okay, so there's several things. Let's see, this is like the donation card, donation letter. Let's see what, okay, looks nice and fancy. Oh, look at this. The annual report to financial donors from the desk of Dr. Graham Shear, CEO, Canadian Blood Services. Now that's interesting. So they've actually, this is probably not their full annual report. This is probably just the donation section, but that's interesting. They sent this along. So this is, I haven't read this, but I assume that this is all about where the money is going, how it's being utilized, and who is utilizing it. So the people who are involved in the organization. That's a preemptive way to say, this is all the good that we can do with your money. This is everything that's going to happen when you donate to us, all the great things that are going to come about because of this. That's smart and very good that the charity is actually taking the time to send this out. I bet you that this does not go to everybody. I imagine that this is probably sent only to past donors simply because of the cost associated with printing all of these. This is like several pages. But it's printed on nice paper. The picture quality is good. It's all in color. Groovy graphics. The text is a little bit smaller than I think it should be. Probably be a bit bigger, but nevertheless, talking about some of the things that they've done, some of the initiatives that they've had. Oh, here look at some financial statements. Very good. Total cash donations received for the year ending March 31st, 2014 were $3,512,510. Compared to $1,392,394 in 2012-2013. Wow, that is a big number change. They went from 1 million to 3 million. They went from 1.3 to $3.5 million. Wow. And ladies and gentlemen, I helped make that happen. Look at that. Okay, cool. And they have our outstanding annual supporters, Bayer Inc., Manulife, Estate of Ann Sheldon Sanderson. So a couple of the organizations that are supporting them. Great, good stuff. Gift in Kind supporters. Excellent. Those are people who have like matching campaigns. Canadian Blood Services. They did a thing with the Ottawa Senators, which is cool. Special thanks to matching gift companies. Again, always good stuff to have recognition like this. Volunteer profile. Oh, that's good. That's great. Sends a message about the volunteers. And on the back, campaign for All Canadians Patron Circle. So these are people who have made like large donations and they have their names, and the amounts, sort of like the general ballparks of the amounts. So that's really good. I don't see my name, but I didn't give $1,000. I gave like $60. Whatever. That's okay. That's fine. So cool. That's really nice. I'm going to look over that later. Alrighty. So that was the financial report. And again, I think that's too long for me to sort of read through, obviously. But let's take a look at the actual like donation message. This is interesting. Wow. The paper that this is printed on is very, very light. It's like it feels lighter than actual normal paper. I wonder if that's something special that they have. Okay. Dear Mr. Clow, formal, I like it. As we prepare for winter, I would like to thank you for your ongoing financial support to the Canadian Blood Services. I don't think it's ongoing, but that's a good way to sort of make me think it is. The charitable gifts we receive are used to improve the blood system, which in turn saves lives or improves lives. Which in turn saves or improves the lives of Canadian patients. I can't read, apparently. As a financial donor, you understand the importance of the blood system. But did you know that about 52% of Canadians say they or a family member have needed blood or blood products for surgery or for medical treatment? I didn't. While Canadian Blood Services has consistently been able to meet the demand for blood, this past October, we faced a critically low blood inventory and launched a nationwide appeal for blood donors. And then it says in bold red, your financial gift today can help recruit the future generation of blood donors to keep Canada's blood supply where it needs to be for the patients who rely on it. Canadians responded to our recent appeal, and patients received the blood they needed. However, we know that we must continually recruit new blood donors to meet the ongoing needs of Canadian patients. This is why we need your financial help now, and that's in bold. As our population ages, we need to invest in programs to directly reach young donors, and we know that the best way to engage youth is through technology. And then it says at the bottom here, youth recruiting youth to save lives. And there's a small sort of dialogue box here with a picture of a pair of young folks. When Gina first partnered with the Canadian Blood Services One Match Stem Cell and Marrow Network in 2011, she had only one goal in mind, saving her younger brother, Johnny's life. Johnny, diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia, was told he would need a stem cell transplant to survive. Gina was determined to recruit more registrants. She has volunteered at an on-campus events and stem cell drives in her community, helping to register close to 1,600 stem cell donors. Today, chemotherapy has put Johnny's cancer into remission, and he has no immediate need for a stem cell transplant. But Gina remains determined to find a matching donor for every patient in need and continues to influence stem cell registration across the country as chair of the Get Swabbed National Liaison Committee. And on the other side, fact, 43% of blood donors use a mobile device. Duh. With 20% of our blood donors under the age of 25, communicating through mobile devices will help keep us connected to them. And with more than 1 in 5 households in Canada relying on cell phones as their only form of communication, we must invest in programs that work with these devices. Okay. Your donation will be used to invest in the technology we know can help us recruit younger donors, including mobile devices such as iPads, which donors can use right at recruitment clinics to share their experience and recruit others on social media. Huh. Improvements to our award-winning Give Blood app, which gives donors an easy way to track their donations and make appointments. Short messaging services, SMS, which lets us text donors about appointments and enable them to recruit others in real time. Well, that makes sense. Let's see. Recruiting youth to become donors is key to ensuring a healthy and robust blood system now and in the future. Please make a donation to Canadian Blood Services and help us recruit more young blood donors and stem cell registrants. As Gina Parker discovered when she learned of Johnny's cancer diagnosis, it's critical that more donors become involved. Patients' lives depend on it. On behalf of the many patients like Johnny, I thank you for your support. Sincerely, Director of Fundraising Development. P.S. Thank you, our valued supporter. Canadian Blood Services has had the opportunity to recruit the next generation. I'd like to wish you and your family a healthy and happy holiday season and prosperous new year. Well, that's nice. I like that. Okay, well, that's interesting. Let's come back to that. Let's just quickly, because we're running out of time, let's look at the Canadian Blood Services donation card. So it's got kind of like my name and address on one side. Why is my address on it? Oh, I guess because they don't... Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, so they have my address and name on it, so I don't have to fill that part in already. That's good. That helps reduce... That's good. It's really smart. So on the other side of the pay, on the other side of the card thing, please process my single donation of 35, 50, 100, other. Okay, that's good. It's called the jump from 35 to 50. It's not quite double, but not bad. Enclosed is my check made out to Canadian Blood Services or charged by a credit card. Please process my cornerstone monthly donation of 15, 20, 25. Those amounts are a little bit lower than I would think they could push, but whatever. That's good. So monthly giving is registered there. Credit card information, of course. Email address option, charitable number, good on the back. Thank you. Your gift is helping save lives. Please send me more information on other options such as bequest, life insurance, gifts of stock. That's always good to have. Oh, this is good. This is really good. So on the back, it gives you a few checkboxes, and one of them is I have remembered the Canadian Blood Services in my will. That's really important. Planned giving. If you're a nonprofit, you want to make sure you're investing in that, because that can be a huge amount of money later on. Very important to steward people, especially your monthly donors, into leaving a gift in their will. That can be really important for your organization. Let's see, Canadian Blood News newsletter, good. Donate online, that's good. And then it's got some sort of like fine print. We don't sell or trade donor lists. Good. Okay. Well, that's pretty good. That's not a bad appeal. I love that they include the annual report. The donor card is good. Let's just quickly kind of go over this this donor letter. I don't have a problem with the paper stock being kind of thin. That's not a problem for me. What I didn't really like was what they're asking me to give to is a little bit strange. This mobile devices thing, such as iPads, which donors can use, read at recruitment clinics to share their experience and recruit others on social media. I don't see. I mean, okay, this is just me, and I'm just speaking for myself. That does not appeal to me. Like, I don't care if they have iPads when they go to give blood. I don't, you know, that's not going to reach out to me. Improvements to our award-winning Give Blood app, which helps donors keep track of that. Okay, that makes sense. I think that sounds probably pretty useful. Keeping track of when you've last given blood, maybe it has ways to like remind you that you have an appointment coming up. That makes sense. The text messaging thing, yeah, again, I would assume though that they would already have a system in place. Again, like, you know, it's just maybe, again, this is sort of my point of view, but I check my email on my mobile device as much as I check my text messages. So, I mean, sending me an email is just easier. Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, so I think with, comparing the two, you know, the Canadian Blood Services and the BCIT, I think the BCIT one has the stronger appeal. It reaches me on a better level, and I think that the quality of the ask is just a bit more straightforward. With the Canadian Blood Services, again, a great, great package they've sent me. The card is good, the letter is mostly good, the financial report, great. But the quality of their ask, at least, it's not reaching me as much as I think it could. I just wanted to quickly check. Yep, I'm just double checking that the envelope is indeed one of the lucky ones. Gosh, I hate that. So overall, not bad by the Canadian Blood Services. What do you think? Let us know. Feel free to email us at sectorpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, we're also on Twitter @sectorpodcast, or you can tweet @me, Ethan Clow. And find us on Facebook at facebook.com/sectorpodcast. And visit us online at sectorpodcast.wordpress.com. Online, you'll be able to find the podcast and show notes, so you can follow up on anything that we put up there and do your own research. It's always important. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, we'll be back next week on The Sector for our last new episode of 2014. And we will return in 2015 on January 9th. So a few weeks off for the holiday season. Well then, let's wrap things up here on The Sector. This is Ethan Clow, your host, saying once again, thank you for joining us. Hope you enjoyed episode 31 of The Sector. And tune in next week, same time, same channel, here on CITR, Fridays at 8 a.m. And of course, via the podcast, which you can get at sectorpodcast.wordpress.com. We will see you next week. Take care.